Recording in progress. All right, everyone, we will now call to order this meeting of the Champaign County Mental Health Board, Wednesday, May 21st, 2025, 5:45 p.m. in the Shields Carter Room of the Brookings Administrative Building, Urbana, Illinois. May I have a roll call?
John Paul Joachim.
Here.
Chris Miner.
Here.
Tony Nichols. Joe Omosagie.
Here.
Elaine Palencia. Kyle Patterson, Emily Rodriguez, Jane Sprandle,
here,
Molly McClay,
here. Chris? Did they say you?
Yeah.
Okay. I don't know
why
I
said Chris. There's a quorum.
Okay. Thank you. All right, we do have a quorum. So next we will move to approve the agenda. There has been a request to adjust the agenda slightly so that the evaluation capacity building project update can happen earlier in the meeting. Lynn, would that make sense to move to be after the staff reports or even earlier than that?
It's up to you. I think the up to the staff reports is usually quite quick. So if you want to do that.
All right. Well, with that in mind, I will recommend that item 13A, the Evaluation Capacity Building Project Update, be moved to be after item 6, the staff reports. Wait, that is not item 6. That is item 11. Because I can't do Roman numerals, apparently. Any further amendments? All right, seeing none, I will move to approve the agenda as amended.
Seconded.
Thank you very much. Any final discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor of approving the agenda as amended, say aye.
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 All those opposed, same sign. The ayes have it. The agenda is approved as amended. Next, we will move to the MHB and DDB schedules and updated MHB timeline on pages 3 through 7 of the packet. I can't remember if we discussed this at the last meeting, but we have, Lynn, would you mind sharing about the schedule change?
We're going to cancel the June 18th meeting, because, especially because with two full business meetings 2 weeks in a row, you're very likely to get everything done that can possibly be done. There is an error on this meeting schedule, which I'm so excited to tell you about, and that's that we will be, if we're not meeting again until July 23rd, we're going to change the address to the Bennett Building. So starting in July, we'll be meeting over there. And I learned today we'll have new microphones.
Well, that is very exciting. So next week may be our last meeting in this space. So that is exciting. Thank you for the updates. We just to also mention, we often do officer elections in June, but we just have to do them before July. So that will be at next week's meeting. All right. Any questions, discussion about the schedules and timeline? All right, seeing none, we will move to the CCMHB acronyms and glossary on pages 8 through 19. Any updates to this? Nope. Any discussion? All right, seeing none, next we will move to public participation, agency input. As always, members of the public are welcome to give input to the Mental Health Board. We cannot respond directly, but we may use the input to inform future actions. You can give input virtually by raising your hand or notifying us in the chat that you want to participate, or you can come to the podium to share your input. Just a reminder that agency representatives and others who are providing input should be aware of the Illinois Lobbyist Registration Act and take appropriate steps to be in compliance with the act. Given this, I reserve the right to limit individual time to 5 minutes and total time to 20 minutes. Given this, is there anyone in person or online who would like to share input with us? All right, seeing none, we will move on. There will be another opportunity later in the meeting to give input as well. So next we will move to chairperson's comments. So I'm Molly McClay, the chair of the Mental Health Board. We have a lot to discuss this evening, so I'll keep my comments brief. I just want to also point attention to the fact that there have been continued moves at the federal level to that greatly impact mental health and developmental disability services and may continue to do so, including with the potential forthcoming budget. And just want to make a reminder that, you know, our board stands here to support the community and the mental health of all of our community members, and are very grateful that we have this fund available. And one way that we can support the community and mental health services is through the PY 2026 funding contracts that we will be beginning to talk further about this evening. And that concludes my comments. So next we will move to Executive Director Lynn Canfield's comments.
I would like to make lots of comments about the meetings and committee meetings that I've been involved in, you know, hearing about what's going on at state and federal levels, but I think I will not talk about them because things tend to be different the next day. So you have so much to do at this meeting, so maybe next time.
All right, that sounds good. So next we will move on to approval of CCMHB board meeting minutes. These are on pages 20 to 25. Action is requested to approve the minutes of the CCMHB's April 16th, 2025 study session and April 30th, 2025 meeting. Any discussion or amendments? Or motions?
I can make a motion to approve the minutes of the April 16th, 2025 study session and the April 30th, 2025 meeting.
Thank you very much. We have a motion and a second. Any further discussion about the minutes? All right, seeing none, all those in favor of approving the minutes of the CCMHB's April 16th, 2025 study session and April 30th, 2025 meeting as presented, say aye.
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 All those opposed, same sign. The ayes have it. The minutes are approved. Next, we will move to the vendor invoice lists on pages 26 through 36. Action is requested to accept the vendor invoice lists and place them on file, and for information or additional details for these expenditures. Any discussion or questions about the vendor invoice lists?
I can make a motion to approve the vendor invoice list as presented.
Thank you very much. Can I have a second? Thank you very much. We have a motion and a second. Any further discussion? All right, seeing none, all those in favor of accepting the vendor invoice list and placing them on file, say aye. All those opposed, same sign. The ayes have it. The vendor invoice lists are accepted and placed on file. Next, we have staff reports on pages 37 through 60. Included in our packet are staff reports from all staff. Any discussion or questions about these?
As always, I'm amazed all the amazing things that our staff does and how many commitments they have to like meetings, whether it's in person or Zoom. I just really appreciate all the efforts they put in to make our community what it is.
Thank you very much. Any further discussion? I did have two questions about the staff reports. One of them was regarding the quarterly reports, because I know there were several agencies that requested an extension, and I was having trouble finding all of them. Like, were there any agencies whose reports are still outstanding?
This, I might need help from Chris Wilson for this, but I think we are still waiting for Courage Connection reports, and this has to do with a problem with, what is it called, InfoNet? Oh. That, like, they don't even have access to their data right now in order to populate our reports, so we're just waiting. I think everybody else got their stuff done, but I'm not totally sure. Does that sound right to you, Chandra? Okay.
It sounds right to me.
Oh, okay. Thank you, Stephanie.
Yeah, I had trouble finding there, so I thought that might be the case. That's very interesting. I know InfoNet is like a state place for data entry, so that's unfortunate that is down. I hope it comes back soon. My other question was, I know there was a contract amendment for Uniting Pride of a name change, and I was just curious if there, what had sort of prompted the name change.
Well, people have been calling them Uniting Pride for years and years, but they're in our system as Up Center. Mm. So we asked, have you actually changed the name? And they had. Pretty recently. So they sent us the documentation of that. It was probably the most simple contract amendment ever. Like, beautiful.
Yeah. I was curious because I thought Up Center of Champaign County was the name. And was Champaign County removed for a particular reason?
I don't know. I don't know. I don't have I could actually probably easily find it. It might be Uniting Pride of Champaign County, but it just isn't the Up Center anymore. But I'll find that and show it to you.
I see. I was wondering if it was because it had, like, expanded beyond Champaign County, but it sounds like the main thing was about changing it away from Up Center to Uniting Pride. So maybe we will find out more soon. Thank you very much for answering those questions. Any other questions or discussion?
Chris Wilson wrote in the chat that everybody has done, including Courage Connection, so yay.
Oh, that's great. Yeah. Any other discussion or questions? All right, seeing none, we will now move to the item from the agenda that has been moved up in the meeting. So the item 13A, the Evaluation Capacity Building Project Update, will occur now. And so there has been a second year annual report that's been provided on pages 104 to 120 of the packet. And we do have a representative for the team to share more about this, as well as a link to the microlearning videos, and the website is now going to be included in the agenda just for our reference. And Dr. Dariotis, if you want to take it away.
Someone very tall was sitting here before. Well, thank you, everyone, and I want to express gratitude for shifting us in the agenda, so I really appreciate that. Happy hump day, everybody. We're having a great day. It's just getting better because we're going to hear about the evaluation report, right? So for our evaluation report, it's in your packet, but in case you haven't had the time to go through all of the glorious details, we're going to hit some highlights this evening. And I always like to start out with gratitude and appreciation for the agency staff and leaders who have been participating in this evaluation for the last 2 years and longer, as this board has had the wisdom to have evaluation capacity building, which has been really important for the agencies and the board. And also our working group members who meet with us biweekly or monthly and have provided a lot of wisdom and insight to make sure that the work that we're doing is continuously relevant. board members and staff who have met with us and who listen to us every month, too, and we come and give our reports. Programs that are participating in the technical assistance, which they're participating for quite a few more hours than everyone else who are getting intensive and technical assistance. And, of course, the funding that has been provided to make this work actually happen from the Mental Health and Developmental Disability Boards. Tonight, I'm going to give you a bit of context in revisiting some of the project goals and strategies for the evaluation capacity building, revisiting year one needs assessment takeaways, just to demonstrate how year two has been mapped onto that in an extension of it, give a summary of our year two activities, and talk about our next steps for the next year and two. So to provide some context about the project goals and the approaches to the capacity building and partnering, so the project goals, there's an overarching goal to build that capacity for evaluation activities within different funded agencies using both participatory and empowerment evaluation approaches. And I'll go into those in a little bit more detail in our next slide, but really having agencies participate or be partners in the process and really helping to inform what their needs are. And then the empowerment component is so that they now have the skills that they can do it by themselves over time and can do it in-house rather than having to externally outsource evaluation activities. Our year one goal was really to determine from both the agencies and the boards the different needs, the strengths, and different expectations for the evaluation team in the capacity building activities, and then to move that into action. And then year two was really utilizing what we found out from that needs assessment and ongoing feedback that we've been receiving to actually make relevant capacity building activities and to change course as necessary across time so we're timely. So our approaches, our first approach is participatory, so it's really centering staff voice and having multiple perspectives and engaging agencies, board as partners in the process. This allows for a more holistic understanding of what the current capacity is, what needs to happen, what has worked in the past, and what needs still remain to be addressed. And then the empowerment component is that capacity building so that people are developing the skills within their own agencies so that they can implement and sustain those practices and becoming continuous learning organizations that they're continuously increasing their toolbox and can implement it over time. So if you like visuals, I use this visual quite a bit to show on the left-hand side the helicopter science, which is swooping in and doing two and then coming back out and not really leaving a lot for whomever has been done to. And that is when partners really don't have a lot of buy-in, don't have a lot of voice into what is being done. All the way over to the right side, which is very community-based in terms of participatory research, in terms of research with youth, and that's really doing with, so really building that capacity with, and then eventually it being conducted by others so that they can do it on their own, create their own narratives, and have all of the resources necessary to do all of the excellent work that they need to be doing. This is another visual, which was in our original proposal, and we come back to it just to make sure that we are consistent with what we said we would do and that we're consistent with a model that has been shown to be impactful in terms of empowerment evaluation. So here you'll see that there are four different types of strategies to bring one from their current capacity level to where they want to be. So on the left-hand side is their current capacity, and then all the way to the right is the actual outcomes that they want to achieve. And within that are things like creating tools, developing trainings, technical assistance is what the TA is, and then quality improvement and quality assurance is what the QIQA is. And so to show what we've been doing in the terms of the tools, we've been creating things like the micro learning videos and updated measures repository, which are asynchronous. They're available all the time. They're publicly available. And then training workshops to, we've done some trainings on how to identify outcomes, how to develop measures or identify measures that are existing. And that has been in person or virtual for the learners who like to learn that way instead of asynchronously. We've also been providing technical assistance with selected programs. So that's intensive, and it's based on the needs of those programs, what they are identifying as areas for improvement, as well as what we have helped to identify as those areas, and then helping to build the skills in those different areas. And then we have quality improvement and quality assurance. So working with our working group of different members, having monthly board meetings, finding out from you feedback about things that are going well, anything that we should be shifting, as well as staff progress check-in meetings. So our year one needs assessment identified agency and board strengths and areas for growth. For program evaluation, we had perspectives from 76 different individuals, from agency staff to agency leaders to evaluators from past projects. And what we took away from that is that agencies and boards want to be heard. They want to participate in the process and inform the needs and the actions. They want resources so that we can provide knowledge, improve the efficiencies, and allow them to enable them to be proficient in their storytelling. And then also to work together, so creating communities of practice, having open communications that we're transparent about who is doing what, and making sure that we are in line with what expectations are. So now that you know what we had found from year one, our summary of activities from year two were technical assistance. So we really tailored the support that we provided to specific programs based on their needs and worked with the agency staff and also with the board staff to identify who those programs were so that then we could provide that technical assistance. We had a working group across different agencies with both developmental disability and mental health representation to provide us with rapid feedback on our evaluation topics and the trainings that we were developing as we were developing them to find out, is it hitting the right tone? Is it not necessarily too much of a 30,000 foot view or not in the weeds, so we're making sure that we're tailoring it based on the needs of the different agencies. Trainings and resources, so that capacity building in terms of the materials that we were developing based on agency-driven needs from the needs assessments as well as from the working group, and then having that open communication and informal support, so consistent communication about our progress, what we were planning for in terms of future activities, and then the availability for questions if anybody has those at any time. So not just the agencies and programs that we were providing technical assistance for. If others wanted to have conversations with us, ask us a quick question, we made ourselves available for that as well. So to go a little bit more into our technical assistance, we had four programs identified to have the greater support. We improved their understanding based on topics that they thought were important, which included logic models. So who doesn't love a logic model, right? And we tried to present it in ways that won't make people cry. So, and we'll give you an example of that later, which was a direct quote from the needs assessment. So, you know, we're aiming to, you know, meet the needs. Survey development. So some of the programs wanted help with developing a survey, survey administration, as well as learning about online systems and administrating it, and then data analysis based on the data that they were collecting, quantitative data and qualitative data. And so the effect was that we gave a survey out to the agencies and programs that we served, and five participants responded back, so at least one person per each one of the programs that we provided technical assistance, and all of them said that they would use this in the future and that they had developed those skills. In terms of technical assistance, just to give you an idea of how we met with the different program representatives, we had a kickoff meeting. Then if they wanted help with logic models or surveys or whatever it was that they helped to identify as their needs, we worked on that. Data collection tools were developed. Data collection management was also addressed in terms of efficiency and different systems that they could use to manage their own data. Then data analysis and then reporting to the board. And one of the survey respondents said that collaboration was strong. They appreciated the reciprocal input, which was reflected in the final outcome of the survey tool. So demonstrating that we really worked with them to develop the tool and that their input was utilized and reflected in the actual instrument that was finally developed. So our cross-agency working group, we had 7 agencies participate, and for any given meeting, we had at least 3 of the core members who met regularly, and this was essentially every other week or twice a month, which was really, really great for them to provide that time. We also provided an honorarium, which we were very grateful that we could do that, and they were very grateful to have it. So we wanted to recognize and honor that they went above and beyond to participate in this group. They provided feedback, helped to troubleshoot, and had evaluation learning as part of the process. So even if they weren't receiving the technical assistance, which none of them were, they were able to learn and build their toolbox with evaluation through the working group. And we received rapid feedback on all of our evaluation products and trainings, making sure that it was the readability, that it was hitting the right tone, that it was addressing the right content. And also those working groups themselves are building community among themselves and hopefully moving towards a community of practice over time. So one of our working group members said this, that the working group has been valuable in building my knowledge around logic models. It's changed my mindset and approach to my organization's programs, and I am now better able to contribute to those sorts of discussions, which demonstrates that additional value added in learning through the process. And we've learned quite a bit from them as well. In terms of trainings and resources, we had an outcome measurement workshop where we had 25 participants, 18 different agencies represented. We went through a measures repository and also best practices in choosing outcome measures. Publicly available 4-part series on logic models, and we've had over 800 player impressions since January 2025, which means people who are viewing the series. So we're really happy to see that. And we've had 6 total micro-learnings across the 2 years, and we've had over 1,600 player impressions of people utilizing this. What we have been also privy to is that these resources are being broadly shared across not only the funded agencies, but other agencies. So the United Way and other funders are directing people towards these micro-learnings to help improve the work that they're doing as well and using it as a resource. So you may not have observed it yourself, but we have a microlearning
series of short videos about logic models from the Family Resiliency Center. In this video, you will learn what a logic model is, why it matters, and look at the first part of a logic model, inputs. Many people compare a logic model to a roadmap. A logic model can help visualize the step-by-step pathways that lead to program success. It links the resources, activities, and participation of your program to the results that you intend to achieve. In other words, it demonstrates how your intended outcomes will logically follow from a series of outputs, which outputs in turn are a result of a set of resources needed to implement and evaluate a program. You might also say that a logic model is like a recipe for success. Hi, and welcome to Finally, Healthy Recipes for Improving Cholesterol. Today we're going to discuss inputs. Inputs are simply the resources at your disposal. And in the case of creating a television show about baking healthy cookies, inputs might include ingredients, studio time, and staff, like a camera operator or a certain chef.
Hooray!
Great. Okay, so it looks like we're ready to start baking our healthy cookies. I've got nothing to put them on. I forgot to talk about materials. Materials like an oven or a baking sheet. Now we're ready. This is an analogy, but for your agency, inputs might include infrastructure, like physical space or information technology, human resources, like your staff, financial capital or funding, social networks, training, like the necessary professional development of staff, and tangible assets like computers or other tools. Here are some takeaways in considering the importance of inputs to your program's success. Inputs should be aligned with your program's activities and goals. Consider what you intend to achieve and how, and then ask whether the resources to which you currently have access are sufficient. Do you need more? Inputs should account for program sustainability. Are your resources able to support activities and participation for the program's duration? Or do you expect that you will need to, for example, upgrade your technology in a couple of years? Finally, inputs should be efficient. Is it necessary to ask for funding for every listed resource in order to achieve program success? Consider which resources are a one-time investment, like some materials, and which are ongoing, like staff salaries. Can any resources be borrowed from elsewhere, whether that is space, materials, or volunteer time? Thank you for watching.
So I didn't see any tears, so I think that that's okay. And so that was Nate Underland, who is associate director and has done a lot to bring the vision to a reality with these microlearnings. We're not going to show them all to you because I want to increase the downloads. No, I'm joking. I figure you can look at the other ones as well. And we actually have one up there that's about 20 minutes. That's a start to finish with a conversation of a program director and myself to actually show that you can actually do it in real time in less than an hour to develop your own logic model. So in terms of open communication and informal support, we try to make ourselves as available as possible, coming to have monthly updates to the Mental Health and Developmental Disability Boards, also monthly progress meetings with board staff. And this has really helped to demonstrate that we're all on the same page, we're moving in the same direction, and that we are able to get feedback from lots of different people throughout this entire process. And our annual report offers a public accountability and understanding of what activities we're doing and why we're doing them. Some next steps include identifying funded programs needing in-depth technical assistance, so we're working on that, and also developing new trainings for different areas in which agencies, board staff, and others think that training is needed, including effective reporting, storytelling, and data visualizations are on the docket, as you can read in our report. Evolving working group into a community of practice, so moving in that direction is going to take a bit of time, but we're embarking on that process. And if there are any agencies or program staff who want to be part of that, we are a collaborative and open group, so anyone can reach out to us to join our working group. And then we're also going to be piloting office hours for specific and quick needs so that agencies and programs that are not necessarily receiving the technical assistance but have evaluation-specific questions can reach out to us and actually sign up for office hours to have quick responses to some questions that they might have so that they can get those answered quickly. And so a big thank you to everything that you're doing and your support and to everyone else who's been part of this process. So we really, really appreciate the opportunity to be able to do this and to help build the evaluation capacity. So, and I open it up for questions, thoughts, comments, concerns.
Yeah, I just wonder, is this your approach different from the last provider in some ways? I was just thinking if an agency worked with the other group mm-hmm. before, would
yeah.
they need to come back, or have they got pretty much the same process, you know, down? Or
so I think, and others can chime in about the history, but I think that the previous evaluation team also approached it as working with and building up the capacity in that way. I would say we're probably doing a few things differently in terms of having the micro-learnings and asynchronous learning. I think COVID has taught us a lot, too, about the need to develop tools that can be accessible to lots of different learners and in having it asynchronous, I think, is helpful. I also think that in terms of determining who needs technical assistance, I think that also is a question of who at this current time needs it, because there might be turnover in agencies. So I can't say it would necessarily be that an agency who had been had technical assistance before might not need it still. It all depends on where the agency is at currently or the program is at right now. And I can say that we've had some programs within one agency where we've helped them with multiple programs because they've had multiple programs in different teams. But I welcome anyone who historically has any additional guidance on it but I think we're all trying to move the capacity forward in new ways that are addressing the current real-time needs of the different agencies.
Well, just for example, you seem to have a longer horizon, you know, building it out to have the relationships last longer and more about community, but I just didn't know if how you saw it. Yeah.
Lynn, is there something you wanted to chime in with?
Just that there's only one person who's worked with both teams. So not only is that kind of a low set, that person really got a lot from the first team and then built a lot on that knowledge on her own and then started working with you. So it's really hard to, I mean, she'd be a good one to ask, like, how different is this?
Yeah.
But I would say, like, she probably can't even compare. Yeah.
The philosophy and the general process seems the same. You're dealing with the same elements, but
right. I think we're wanting to build the capacity from within and also trying to think about how can we make things that are sustainable and long term and trying to move towards that community of practice, which does take quite some time to develop. And as you know, these agencies are doing great work and trying to do a lot with very little, and time is an essential component as well, and figuring out how to develop that community, I think, is important. So, yeah, absolutely. Yes.
Hi. I was just wondering, and you kind of alluded to this in the presentation, that, you know, the micro learnings are broadly shared, and you know, you're finding that a lot of other people are using it as a resource, which is great. And I know that this is kind of still in its infancy, kind of still developing. But do you see any, like, the turnover in agency leadership and the effectiveness of the longevity of that learning being passed on to new leaders in agencies, or having to start all over and re-teach those agencies because they have new leadership? How are you seeing? Have you seen any turnover, and how that's evolved in those people still learning that are still there, or do you have to reteach some of the new people that come in?
So what I would say is that having the micro learnings helps to make it that the resource is continuously there, and it doesn't have to be waiting for a workshop or waiting for a training. I can't speak to how much of the turnover is happening in the agencies and then them going to the micro learnings or not. I can say we had an uptick around the time of the applications, and I think that's because we really communicated about this being a resource. And I also think it's a good refresher, even if agencies have done it before or have heard about it, actually being able to go through it, I think, is beneficial. So if anything, I think if there is turnover, having it available will be helpful in that respect. So that's our hope and aim. Yeah.
I was going to ask a little bit more about this idea of the evolution into a community of practice and what you foresee that looking like. It sounds like the working group might be an opportunity to move in that direction, but you also alluded to it being something that can take some time. So I was wondering kind of what you might envision, especially since that's kind of part of the next 2 years potentially. Mm-hmm.
Yes, so I would say that in my history of engaging in communities of practice, some of the limiting factors is people having the time to do it, and also finding those few champions who buy into it and want to lead it. So currently we're leading it, and so over time it's going to take time for others to feel like they can start to own it and to lead it, so it's not only us, and we would be there for support. So that's also why it takes some time to develop that. And also, as you probably are aware, agencies have a lot of turnover, so making sure that who is in that collective mass is staying on in being a champion. I also think it's a mindset shift as well, as that sort of the ownership of, we want to move this group forward, we want to continue it, we want to expand it in these areas. And so that's what we're trying to do right now, is to start to build it up from a place that doesn't start out as, you're going to own this thing, right? Because that can be daunting to people. Like, what am I signing up for? So that's sort of why it does take some time for that to happen. But that's our hope. And so and we're also hoping that more people, once they hear about others who've been part of the working group and have benefited from it and have gained the knowledge and that it's not really so much of a drain, but they're actually getting benefit from it, that more and more people will start to sign up and be part of it. And then it can start to create that community larger across the agencies. That's different from some of the other meetings and other commitments that they have as well, that they can see it as different and value added. Does that answer your question?
Yeah, and I think that also is something that I think makes your team's approach distinctive, that they're like one of the ways that this can move toward agencies kind of growing their capacity and taking ownership of like evaluation is for their to, I guess, essentially organically grow this group that convenes themselves to talk about evaluation. Like, to my knowledge, I don't think we've ever had anything like that in this community. And that would be very cool if that is what emerges.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. My other question was how the office hours idea came mm-hmm. to be, because mm-hmm. that kind of sounds like almost like an evolution of the technical assistance. If mm-hmm. somebody is like, okay, we're on our own now, we're not mm-hmm. getting the technical assistance, but maybe occasionally mm-hmm. we have a question mm-hmm. and we can come to you to get this mm-hmm. like quick evaluation question answered mm-hmm. while we're like trying to do this on our own. I was wondering if that's kind of mm-hmm. what you're envisioning and how that mm-hmm. came about.
Yeah, so it came about in part because of we had the in-person training for the outcomes measures, and there were some questions from that, and then someone followed up and said, I have this question, and I thought, and the team thought, well, if someone has this one-off kind of question, how would they be able to, they might feel like there's a barrier of like, who do I reach out to and when do I do it? So then we thought, well, maybe there's more of that going on. So then we can open up some office hours and see if anyone signs up. As a faculty member, no one shows up to office hours, right? So it's by appointment only. But I figured if we do something and we're going to figure it out, is it Calendly or something else where people can then feel comfortable saying, I'm going to sign up for a time slot because I have these questions. To me, that's really helpful because they're not spinning their wheels, you know, on their own if they have questions. And then we can take, the hope is too that we can take it, how many people are coming to us with which kind of questions, and then we can make a frequently answered questions or a micro learning based on what they might be asking, so that then if they have that question, there's chances are that more people will have that question, and we can create some resources that would be useful for that moving forward. So it's going to be a proof of concept. Does it work? Did people really sign up and want to ask us some questions? And then what are those questions that then we can build it out for others? Mm-hmm.
I like how that like sort of formed organically from things that you were seeing happen like in the course of the last 2 years. It mm-hmm. definitely, I'm just thinking about times in my career when I have been working on evaluation, having something like that would have been really helpful when I was like stuck and like, I just need to figure out mm-hmm. besides Googling, how do I work through this? So very, very cool. Any other questions or comments from the board?
Great. Well, you can always reach out to me. My last name is Dorietis, not Doritos, illinois.edu. So, and always feel free to reach out. Thank you so much for all your support. We appreciate it.
And thank you very much. Well, we will now move on to new business. So we will start with the deferred special requests on pages 61 through 63 of the packet. So for the board's consideration, we have a decision memo presenting an update on agency's PY 2024 audit with some of the actions that were deferred on April 30th, now requested due to the audits being in. Lynn, would you mind giving just a little context on what is in the memo?
I'm really trying to write shorter memos. I have a 4-page staff report in this packet and then a 3-page decision memo, so I'm getting there. It is really the key item is at the top of page 62. Champaign County Christian Health Center had shared an audit. You already, like, I think when you met on April 30th, I already had the audit, maybe. And we were, like, that's right. Or maybe we didn't.
I think it came that day, but like issues hadn't been quite resolved yet. So we ended up voting to continue the contracts once the issues are resolved. But we deferred discussing the consideration of the funding request for this coming year.
And on April 30th, you had so many similar decisions that I wasn't quite clear on what you meant by some of them. So this is just in an abundance of caution. We did restart the contract and the payments for Christian Health Center and First Followers. But Christian Health Center also has a PY26 funding application for you to consider. And this is a good time to decide whether to consider it or not. Then Women in Need Recovery completed their audit on May 7, and the follow-up was really fast for that one. There was no need for follow-up. So yay, it was fast. We released the January, February, and March payments, but we did not release April payments because you did not make a decision on April 30th regarding continuing or canceling the contract. So for Women in Need Recovery, we know that decision still needs to be made. And then similarly, they have two requests for PY26 funding. So there's a whole couple pages of possible motions.
Yes, and I just want to clarify that I requested that we go ahead and vote on all three of these again, even though there could be multiple ways to interpret if defer consideration meant we would automatically consider it once the audit came in, or if we would want to discuss it more given, you know, any issues that emerged with the audit. So I went ahead and requested that we have votes for each of these. So just as a reminder, you know, we will be doing three votes. And like last time, you know, these are regarding, you know, these audits that were originally due on December 31st, then got, you know, a grace period until March 31st. And, you know, we're not in by that point. So but at this point in time, as of April 30th, Champaign County Christian Health Center's audit was turned in, and as of May 7th, when recoveries was turned in, and all issues appear to be resolved. So I do want to just do a brief reminder that, like at the last meeting, we may have some questions for agency representatives. Please do not start talking unless designated about that, because we may not have any questions either. So board members, if you have a question for any agency representatives, please direct that to me, and I will request that the agency representative begin sharing with us. So we can start with, I guess we could start in any order of these possible actions: the continuation of the WIN Recovery PY 2025 contract, considering the Champaign County Christian Health Center's PY 2026 funding request, and considering the WIN Recovery's PY 2026 funding requests. I guess I will open it to board discussion regarding all three of these matters, and then we can determine how we want to proceed forward.
I'll just say that, you know, based on the fact that the Champaign County Christian Health Center had their audits, you know, turned in, and the staff and resolved all issues with the staff, I'm fine with the second set of motions, with the first one saying to consider the funding request for CCHC, and then for WIN, you know, obviously everything is in, so I'm fine continuing the contract from April 1st to June 30th, and then considering the funding requests. Obviously, it doesn't mean that we are going to approve funding. It just means that we would consider it. But that's my opinion. I'm definitely open to everyone else's thoughts as well.
Thank you.
Likewise, that was pretty much what I was going to say, because they have furnished the things we've asked, and so now whether or not we approve funding for future requests, that's later in the meeting. But at this point, I think everyone has what's needed in for the two that we would consider new funding requests, and to then release those other payments for remainder of the contract, I'd be fine with.
Seems like we have several agreements. I wanted to state, you know, I am concerned about the continued issues with the audits, as I've mentioned at other meetings. And I know with at least one of these agencies, they were later on their audit this year than they were in the prior year. For some agencies, they have gotten, you know, closer and closer to getting it in by the deadline. But that has not necessarily been the case with everyone. And I am concerned that if we continue to go ahead and approve these after they have been so late, I think in both cases, the staff had to scramble to get the audits reviewed, get questions answered, such that we could get this information in time for this meeting or the prior meeting. So I am continuing to be concerned about these delayed audits and the fact that this is both a staff burden to have to quickly turn these things over to us, and also a burden on the board to have to continue discussing and continue voting on these matters. That said, I am hearing mostly a consensus about going ahead and continuing the Wind Recovery current contract and considering these funding requests in question. So I would likely vote to do the same, recognizing that, at least for me, my patience is wearing thin.
Well, I go, oh, thank you, Joe. I don't know what I just said, so I can't say it again. But yeah, we do have to draw a line somewhere, but not here. I think the line, I mean, I'm telling you right now, I'm no on two things when it comes to actually 2026 funding. And we have about $500,000 shortfall that we're going to have to account for somewhere. I know where I want it to come from. And I just know last year I talked to Lynn about this. We kind of just kicked 10 or 8% off everybody. And I really do not want to do that this year. I think we have to celebrate the organizations that are doing better with paperwork. And despite my rant on penalizing and punitive stuff, we got to do something. So,
and I don't think that cutting across the board is really as fair as anyway as it looks, because 10% off a small agency is different from 10% off a big agency. So,
yeah, and I think you know, as we'll discuss later, there have been some funding allocation scenarios presented. The agencies that we have reviewed prior to this meeting, the funding requests we reviewed, do have like full sort of funding allocation scenarios presented, whereas the agencies that have not been reviewed yet have some details but not a scenario presented. So, you know, the later this information comes to us, the lesser likelihood that an agency will get its full request. So that is something to consider as well. Is there any other comments from the board on these matters before we take it to a vote? Apparently we have coffee.
Okay.
So Lynn is asked to make a comment. So
President Molly,
folks, perhaps get coffee. Lynn can share with us.
President Molly.
Thank you.
President McClay.
Yes.
There is a raised hand, and I know you were clear about no comments until people wanted to talk. Is that correct?
I guess if anybody has, whose hand is raised?
Bethany Little from Wynn Recovery.
All right. I guess, do board members want to hear from her right now? Or have specific questions?
I would like to hear from her. In particular, I know that there were other things that other materials that we're looking for this organization. I think like board minutes were one. Is that correct? So I guess just overall the growing pains and where they are as an organization, I would like to hear from. And if I can tack one more question on, are you familiar or aware with the opioid settlement funds that are coming through the county right now? We've got 400,000 left to spend. And every year after that, we will have 90,000 to spend. I just want to let that soak into everybody.
Thank you. We would like the representative from Wynn to please share with us their her comments and also respond to Ms. Rodriguez's questions.
Thank you for that opportunity. Yes, so the board minutes are coming. We had some special committee minutes that we were trying to get together. And so I noticed Stephanie had requested those today. And so those will be coming over as well. I do want to say, in regards to the audit, as you guys talk about it, it seems like it's a very cut and dry thing, but audits aren't very cut and dry. The lack of auditors in the state of Illinois is substantially high. So the workload is, it's almost impossible to get, at least I felt, the first year I had a very difficult time even finding one because our one dropped us last minute. But I wanted to say that our audit being late, it may sound, I guess to you all it sounds negative, but for us, it is a growing pain. We're a multi-million dollar organization. Nonprofit organization that went from $150,000 in 2019 to about $2 million in 2025. And so not only that, we recently received federal funding last year. So with the knowledge of knowing how to report federal funding in our audit, that is over $750,000. That is where we ran into a lot of problems with our accountant and our auditor. And so it wasn't that ours just wasn't in. It was that we were really trying to get through hurdles and learning through CLA. That's who our auditing is through. And there were some hurdles that we had to get through in regards to them learning how to report certain things with federal funding and such. And so, I take the responsibility of being late, but how it's talked about, I feel as if it's like, you know, we're at the mercy of the individuals. I mean, that's just the bottom line. And we did everything that we could do to get it going. And so I wanted to at least speak up on that matter that, yeah, okay, that was a situation. But on the other hand, we are a small nonprofit at limited capacity, you know, functioning at this level. And, you know, Lynn can attest to when we did get it in, it was correct. There was no going back and forth. And so that was a win for us. But I did want to at least speak about that. So, and yes, we have been meeting with the drug court, and they had let us know about the opiate funds. And so, yes, we're going to try to figure out how to file for that funding as well as we move forward.
Thank you very much for sharing. I do have a follow-up question. It sounds like the situation with the audit now, the audit came in very clean, which we really appreciate. And I guess I'm wondering what processes and infrastructure are being set up for next year such that it will not, this will be the last time that it is late.
Well, we're actually looking to hire an internal accountant. We have contracted with CLA since the very beginning, and the amount of funds that we're revenue that we're bringing in yearly, we really need someone that is in-house. And so that's the first step that we are taking in regards to making sure that that doesn't happen again, as well as making sure that we are, we've already started gathering all of our information so that we can start submitting it right when the fiscal year ends. And so we just know, it seems like last year was a hurdle because we ran into something. This year's a hurdle. So this year we have everything put in place. Plus, there were some recommendations that were in our review of our proposal through whoever reviewed our proposal. There were some recommendations.
Could we
in
wait?
Regards
That's,
to
the
making
board
sure.
hasn't voted yet to even to even consider it. And that
well, I'm not speaking on that. I'm just speaking on what the recommendations that were given are ones that we've already put in place to make sure that doesn't happen again. So,
right, that is very much appreciated. Thank you very much. Are there any other questions from the board for either agency that we are discussing right now? All right, seeing none, I think that going ahead and moving forward with voting makes sense, so we can take these motions in order. So I will start by moving to continue the Wind Recovery PY 2025 contract from April 1st through June 30th, 2025, issuing payments as scheduled, providing there are no unresolved compliance issues.
I second that motion.
Thank you very much. Any further discussion? All right, seeing none, the motion on the table is to continue the Wind Recovery PY 2025 contract from April 1st through June 30th, 2025, issuing payments as scheduled, provided there are no unresolved compliance issues. May I have a roll call?
John Paul Joachim?
Yes.
Chris Miner?
Yes.
Tony Nichols?
Yes.
Joe Omosagie?
Yes.
Lynn Palencia?
Yes.
Kyle Patterson?
Yes.
Emily Rodriguez?
Yes.
Jane Sprandel?
Yes.
Molly McClay?
Yes. Thank you very much. The motion passes. Next, we will move. I will move to consider the Champaign County Christian Health Center PY 2026 funding request.
Second.
Any further discussion?
Do they have a representative here?
Yeah.
Oh, okay, cool. No questions. I just want to make sure you had somebody here.
Yeah, he had. He was. I think you had to leave by this point, but he was at the last meeting as well and answered some questions. Any other discussion questions? All right, the motion on the table is to consider the Champaign County Christian Health Center PY 2026 funding request. May I have a roll call?
Chris Miner?
Yes.
Tony Nichols?
Yes.
Joe Omosagie?
Yes.
Elaine Palencia?
Yes.
Kyle Patterson?
Yes.
Emily Rodriguez?
Yes.
Jane Sprandel?
Yes.
John Paul Joachim?
Yes.
Molly McClay?
Yes. All right. And lastly, I will move to consider the Wind Recovery PY 2026 funding request. Can I have a second?
Seconded.
Thank you very much. Any further discussion? Seeing none, the motion on the table is to consider the Wind Recovery PY 2026 funding request. May I have a roll call?
Jane Sprandel?
Yes.
John Paul Joachim?
Yes.
Chris Miner?
Yes.
Tony Nichols?
Yes.
Joe Omosagie?
Yes.
Elaine Palencia?
Yes.
Kyle Patterson?
Yes.
Emily Rodriguez?
Yes.
Molly McClay?
Yes. Thank you very much. Both of those last two motions carry. So we will now move on to the next item of the agenda, which is the review of PY 2026 funding requests on pages 64 through 79. So with these items we just voted on and the PY 2024 audits shared and issues addressed, pending board's decisions regarding consideration, which we just voted on, the PY 2026 funding request from Champaign County Christian Health Center and Wind Recovery may be reviewed. There are the draft staff program summaries included for information only to support our discussion. So with our prior two discussions, we will have a staff representative do a brief overview, and then two board members assigned to each application will have time to share and all board members to ask questions. One, Leon Bryson, is on a much-deserved vacation right now, so we will have Chandra Somerville stepping in to provide her spin on this part of the process. So, Chandra, please take it away.
Good evening. Champaign County Christian Health Center is applying for funding for the mental health program, which is a continuation of a current program. The amount requested is greater than the most recent funding amount. The applicant selected closing the gaps in access and care and made the case for that choice. In the staff review, you will see that there is an eligibility issue related to the delayed audit. The numbers of people to be served continue as in the current year contract, and some revisions are requested in order to clarify the financial plan. Particular strengths of this agency's are its unique approach and broad reach, and staff comment of possible interest relates to the outcome measures. The board reviewers were Chris Miner and Jane Sprandel.
Amazing. Thank you. All right. Please take it away.
All right. Not a whole lot to say. I will say I'm asking about this $7,000 surplus. Can you explain that to me?
Me?
Or anybody? Yeah.
I should ask them. If you want the agency to speak to that, he's here. We put that in the review because when we're looking at the presented budget plan, if there's a surplus in any line, we're interested in why, because that should reduce the amount that's needed from the mental health board. But sometimes it's just an error somewhere in form.
Okay. Yeah, you want to come tell me what it is? I'm not trying to pinch pennies, but it's just having a little shortfall. So if that's $7,000, we can appropriate somewhere else. But if it's going to kill you, I'm not trying to kill you. So.
Yeah, and I think it's pretty much just trying to plan for the future, you know, and with just all kind of budget cuts and everything, just having a little reserve.
I don't think I have any other questions. The funding's going up, but I assume your area of effect is going up. Yeah. Okay. Yeah, that's actually all I have. Jane, you got some stuff?
You know, our biggest thing, and we've seen this with extremely majority of our agencies, the people served is going up. I mean, at this printing, you're already at 60 for the first half of the year, and you did about 62 last year. So obviously the need is great. Of course, you know, when you look at a 203% increase, that's a little bit of a sticker shock. But on the flip side, it's on $100,000 of money. So it's one of those things where I think you guys are doing fantastic things. I know you guys had a little hiccup with, audit type stuff. Seems like we've taken care of that. We've learned from our mistakes on that of you got to have the right auditor. So overall, I think you guys are doing a great thing, and it's obviously something needed. And so, yeah, thank you for coming tonight.
I do have one more. I see we're 100% of the funding. Have you been trying to find other funders as well, though?
Yeah, we actually have a couple other grants that we've been working on and getting and receiving. And I do also want to speak to the upcoming need. I don't know if you heard of HBIA, but it's a statewide program that was providing Medicaid benefits to non-documented individuals. That's gone away. It's about $400-something million. That's no longer going to be in the state budget. So we anticipate an uptick of people who were covered that won't be covered. And there's also proposals for Medicaid being cut by $1 trillion between Medicaid and food stamps too. So if that goes through in that level, then you're also going to see more people completely uninsured.
Okay, even though I said I'm done, I'm not. So that kind of makes me think too. I'm big into like doing, you know, grassroots fundraising, things like that. I'm assuming you guys are a very small, you know, office of people. You don't have a lot of, you know, people who are like, hey, let me do some fundraising for you. But is that an avenue you're also looking into, or is there anything you can share about that?
Yeah, we actually have reached out to a company called Pride Philanthropy. And so we've been having them contract with them to help us raise funds. They have an approach of targeting high-end donors because that's where all the money is. and so that's their strategy. And they're actually pretty effective. They've been around for 100 years, and they specifically work with free and charitable clinics. And so we've been working with them for a little while, and things have already been on an uptick with fundraising.
I actually have a couple questions. For, you know, part of the funding is going to go to funding psychiatrists to see patients. You know, obviously that amount of money is not enough to hire a psychiatrist. So where are you getting this psychiatrist part-time from somewhere? Or is it someone that's doing telehealth, or how is that working?
Yeah, and that's what we've had, a psychiatrist just working as a contracted person, just doing limited services via telehealth. And what I also will say, too, is that we've been working with Carl Hospital, and we work with the head of the psychiatric residency program, Dr. Ben Gersh, and they've been seeing patients with us, and we've actually had a meeting with them recently to expand those services as well. Our outreach director has been working with them to actually take some of the mental health care to other areas, and they also see people at our clinic on a regular basis too. So we're expanding that way, and then we also have gotten capital development money to expand infrastructure-wise. We've gotten money from the DCEO. It was just got a couple of days ago, got an email saying that the budget has finally been released by the state budget office after about a year since February. I've been working on that, even though the grant's been just designated for us. It took that long just for them to acknowledge that we're going to get it. But the plan is to actually build a second location in Urbana and be able to still provide direct services, mental, medical, dental care there, but also to do health education and population health. And so we really want to target the community and try to do more of a kind of collective mental health kind of thing there too. And so that's kind of where we're looking to expand in that regards.
And then some more follow-up questions. You know, I'm looking at like the first two quarters of 2025, and, you know, 38 and 22 each quarter for treatment plan clients. I would assume those are probably people that you're probably like seeing with a psychiatrist. Doesn't seem like a lot of patients in 3 months each time. That's about maybe like 3 days of clinical work a month or over 3 months. So how often are the residency program psychiatrists coming, and how often are you having like the contracted psychiatrists coming?
Yeah, and based for $20,000, that's about how much you get from a psychiatrist. So we're limited in scope in terms of that regards, but we are growing the mental health stuff. We have about 3 clinics a month so far with the mental health residents right now. And like I said, we just met last Wednesday to try to look at expanding that.
And then, so it seems like a lot of it are NTPCs, which is like, it seems like it's mostly health education. Mm-hmm. And I was just wondering what exactly is like a health coach? Is it mental health? Is it dietary health? Or is it what kind of health does it include?
On there. That's probably what our director of outreach and wellness kind of works on. We do a lot of different events out in the community, and we provide health education during those events. So that's more of us kind of like touching base with people and making them aware of healthcare services, mental health services that's available that we have, and that's also available in the community. So it's just more of a kind of a screening and other types of things that we do with that.
So are you doing mental health screenings at those events then?
Where the where the residents can come, yes.
But you guys aren't doing just like a PHQ-2 or PHQ-9? All right, yeah, for like adults, just doing like depression screening or anything like that and saying, hey, you need to go see a counselor. Here's a list of counselors, or go see, here's a psychiatry, you know, resources you can go to.
Not that in depth at this point, because these events are kind of more, you know, people kind of milling about kind of thing. So we don't have like that kind of concentrated time with them to kind of go through that much of it. But we definitely offer them the information about services that are available.
I mean, usually like a GAD-7 is just like literally like 7 questions to just check for anxiety to see where your anxiety level is. And you can actually just score it yourself, and it tells you like what 0 to whatever is this mild anxiety or no anxiety, and then mild and then moderate and severe. And then a PHQ-9 is just literally 9 questions, and then you can score it. Each question has a score of 0 to 3, and then it tells you the severity of your depression. And so, you know, I feel like that doesn't, I mean, we do it in our office and it takes literally like a minute to do.
Okay.
And so that's something I feel like could be something that people could then say, hey, you're having some significant symptoms. I mean, you're not a medical professional, but like if you're like, you maybe collaborate with the residency program to be like, hey, can we give this? And what would be that like an algorithm or protocol to say, hey, here's a list of referrals or list of resources. And, you know, maybe here's a number for psychiatry to go give them a call, or here's our next clinic to follow up with.
That's an excellent idea. I think with our staff and volunteers, they probably didn't feel capable. but the residents, and again, that plan to do more outreach with the residents, we could definitely do that.
Any other questions? I do have one, I guess, and a comment, because I think that what you're doing is recognizing that for a lot of individuals, being able to kind of have this holistic approach to mental health and their health that acknowledges like spiritual health is really important. And I think having the ability to like get connected with a service like yours, maybe through somebody's like faith community, was really important. I am wondering, like, do you serve individuals who don't identify as Christian, and kind of how is that navigated? And also, like, how kind of what are the collaboration with faith communities in terms of how they support you all?
Yeah, two good questions. We've been open to everybody since we started 21 years ago. We're very flexible. We offer prayer, but it's very non-intrusive. If people don't want to pray, they can easily decline it, wait for their appointment, no problem. Sometimes we've had people of different faiths. Remember one time we had a Muslim client come in and they said, would you like to pray? It's like, well, I'm Muslim. It's like, well, we just pray to God. So we got that in common. Very flexible. The people who do that are trained. You know, one of our board members is a chaplain or former chaplain of our OSF. And so there's people who know how to properly do that. We also do give liberty to any of our volunteers, particularly our physicians, who can offer prayer to the patients when they meet with them as well. Again, very declinable type of situation if they don't want to have it. But it is something we want to offer and acknowledge that part of people's, you know, overall, you know, well-being. In terms of support, we've gotten support from local churches over the years. We also make sure local churches are aware of who we are so that they can send people our way. I spoke to the Minnesota Alliance not too long ago, kind of informed them about our services. So it's a two-way exchange, both in terms of getting patients from those sources, but also them supporting us and helping us do what we do.
All right. Thank you very much. Any other questions or comments?
This may be a silly one, but you brought up a question. As far as access to pregnancy consultations or maternal care, is that what's your position there?
So we generally haven't done those services because we focus on uninsured or underinsured people. Typically, we haven't seen like children, for example. The only children we usually see are when we're doing like school or sports physicals, but we haven't done any kind of women's health care in that regard. They usually have Medicaid. They're usually going to Promise or some other healthcare facility for those kind of services. Now, I would say that recently we have been able to collaborate with a couple of doctors. Well, one doctor, one physician assistant that do specialize in women's health needs. We're working out details details about how we can collaborate with what they're trying to do. They actually want to start their own FQHC, but they decided to kind of just kind of work underneath our umbrella for the time being. And so we're kind of exploring what we can do there. We're applying for grants and doing all kinds of stuff. There's a lot of available resources for that type of work right now. So we are kind of looking down those paths.
Thank you.
All right. Any final questions or discussion? All right. Thank you very much for all who shared, and thank you so much for answering our many questions.
I appreciate you all. Thank you very much.
All right. Chandra, we are ready for the next one.
WIN Recovery is applying for funding for the program Community Support Reentry Houses, which is a continuation of a current program. The amount requested is the same as the current amount. For this request, the applicant selected the priority category, safety and crisis stabilization, as well as healing from an interpersonal violence, and justified both. The proposed services are gender responsive, trauma-informed health promoting services for justice-impacted individuals, primarily women and LGBTQ+ individuals, transition from incarceration to reentry, residential setting, and follow-up. In the staff review, you will see that there is an eligibility issue related to the delayed audit. Particular strengths of the agency are leveraging other community resources and revenues and the unique approach. And a staff comment of possible interest is related to the client outcome measures. The board reviewers were Kyle Patterson and Tony Nichols.
Seems like a good program. As she mentioned, it's something we'd funded before. I think we're all pretty familiar with it. I didn't have any specific issues.
No issues. What I do like about WIN is that if you look at the measures of client participant outcomes, 12 evidence-based benchmarks from a new way of life safe house model. If you look at the 12 different outcomes and targets, housing stability, acquiring personal identification, maintenance of sobriety, development of self-identified goals, progress toward achieving self-identified goals, compliance with conditions of probation or parole, no reincarceration, ability to access benefits or assistance, regular attendance at recovery meetings, enrollment in school, access resources to employment, sought employment, and family reunification. I like the exhaustiveness of all of that and thinking about, you know, what the needs are for each individual that comes in that needs services, that it's also trauma-informed. I like the uniqueness of those in our community that they are, you know, trying to support with the mental health funds would be going towards those who are incarcerated or through DCFS, parole, probation, or legal counsel.
All right. Do either of you have questions for the agency representative at all? Any other board comments or questions? I did have a question for you, Bethany, regarding, I know that part of the application talked about working with the LGBTQIA community, and I was wondering like how that outreach is going and sort of how often individuals from the LGBTQIA community are engaging with services.
So overall, in in WIN recovery, 90% of our population is our part of the LGBTQ2S+ population. So I've worked with Up Center for years, Nathan. We've been in the circles together for many years. And so we participate in, numerous events in regards to like the pride and everything of that sort, my team. And so, but mostly, honestly, most of our population is part of that population.
All right. Thank you very much. And I know there was a mention of some of the recommendations. I was going to kind of ask Lynn to kind of share a little bit more about the potential special provisions and then understand more about how some of those might have already been implemented by the agency. So, Lynn, if you want to share more.
Well, this is actually it could wait because in the next thing, the next business item, which is a discussion item, we have kind of moved away from some of these. We wrote these back in March based on information that we had then. Since then, there have been so many board discussions, you know, all together, and then individual board discussions and changes at the agency level too. So recognizing that some of these things are, some of the what's in these reviews is not going to appear in the memo that you'll look at later, and then you'll see a different iteration of next week. For example, agencies approved board meeting minutes are already required each quarter, so there were a number of agencies that were struggling to get them to us that frequently, so restating it as a special provision seems kind of silly, but we're going to do it. And I think since we put that in the reviews, several of the agencies that were having that problem have already fixed it. So I'm encouraged that they'll be able to do it. There was also a special provision suggested in many of them related to updating us quarterly on their engagement with CPA firms. And there is kind of a lot behind changing that. You had made a suggestion that we'll see later in that other memo. And then we've done some follow-up behind that to really understand what agencies, especially smaller, newer agencies, can actually expect from their CPA firm, just to kind of get our own expectation a little closer to the reality. And that is kind of further changing our approach on that. So we'll get to those later, but I just wanted to share, like, it's partly because you're looking at these a month and a half after we initially presented them, and we didn't make any changes since then. And you'll see the same in the next one. So I apologize for that, but hopefully we've caught it and fixed it all in the memo that's coming up.
And then I guess, Lynn, for you, if I recall from last year, there was there a provision about having a board member that is based in the county? And yeah. I was wondering how that is going.
Well, Women in Need Recovery does have a local board member, but just want to make sure that they always do. This is one thing. We don't talk about agency board minutes very often, but those are really important. We learn so much. They talk about audit progress. They review financial statements. They talk about if they're having staff vacancy issues. So, and we're getting those, you know, a month after or 2 months after that conversation instead of a year and a half later. So if we just wait for audits to start asking questions like that, a lot of people have moved on to new problems, and so it becomes difficult to finish our follow-up. But those board meeting minutes are really helpful in understanding what's actually going on and being more supportive in solving problems. So I think that we lost track of it for a while. She fixed it. I just want to make sure that we're paying attention either through reading the update, the board minutes as they come, or having more regular communication. Because there's only one local board member or has been, and it's only necessary to have one. So,
thank you very much. And I just wanted to comment also from Leon's staff report. It was mentioned that Bethany has joined the Reentry Executive Committee. So I really appreciate that kind of getting continually involved in these different efforts. Glenn.
And she's also been invited to the problem-solving court meeting. I saw her there last week.
Perfect. I also noticed, you know, some things that seemed evident of involvement with the evaluation capacity building project as well. So that was all of my comments. Any other questions or comments before we go to the next application? All right. Seeing Bethany, we may have more questions for you, so please hang on and thank you for answering our questions so far. So we can move on to the next one.
When Recovery is applying for funding for the program WIN Resilience Resource Center, which is a new request. For this request, the applicant selected the priority category, safety and crisis stabilization, as well as healing from interpersonal violence, and justified both. The proposed services are food, bedding, laundry, and similar supplies for visitors to the center and curriculum books for the agency's trauma, parenting, and recovery classes. MHB funds would help with fees accumulated during incarceration or through DCFS, parole, probation, or legal counsel. In the staff review, you will see that the measures of outcome and utilization are the same as for the other incumbent program, but they should be specific to each program. Particular strengths of the WIN Resilience Resource Center are the range of support options to a target population for whom few resources are reserved and the contribution of staff with lived experience. And a staff comment of possible interest is related to compliance issues. The board reviewers were Elaine Palencia and Emily Rodriguez.
Okay, I have a couple of questions. This request adds a service location and walk-in capacity to the other application, as I understand it. And the number of the PY26 targets for this program are exactly the same as in the request, in their other request. So that may indicate that they're not going to serve any more people by having this walk-in center. But I'll ask about that. And also, under services and people served, as Chandra read, MHB funds would help with fees accumulated during incarceration or through DCFS, parole, probation, or legal counsel. If you look at the requirements and rules for funding that the CCMHB has, there are 20 expenses that are non-allowable. Bad debts is one. Fines and penalties is another. And expenses incurred outside the term of the contract. Now, my question is, do those all not apply to using MHB funds for fees accumulated, those fees accumulated? And I don't understand where those funds are in the budget anyway. So I just don't understand that whole thing. But I don't think we can fund that for that reason. The other thing I will note is that the scope of services for this application is the same as the scope of services, the list of things that will be paid for, as in the other request. So, you know, the appearance is that we are going to be funding the same thing twice if we fully fund both of those requests. So those are my questions.
So I'll start first with the the items that are asking to be funded. We have a new in-house grant writer, and honestly, what would be funded is, it would not be those. I mean, it would be the program itself. It would not be using these funds to pay for fines and stuff of that sort. So, I mean, if that disqualifies us because the grant was written the wrong way, I guess so. But no, that's not what it is. And I guess the best way to explain it is, let me back up. You would be funding the same thing, only you would be funding people that don't live in our homes. Does that make sense? So everything that we provide for the individuals in our home, in our community homes, that makes them successful, all of that peer-led support, making sure that they get those, making sure that they make those benchmarks and things of that sort, that is the same thing that we do at the Resilience Center, but we are allowed to do it for everybody in the county at the Resilience Center. And so that's why it's so much of the duplication. Now, of course, the Resilience Center, we would serve a lot more than what those numbers are. And it was our grant writer's first year in the mental health, doing a mental health grant. So, but that's the only way that I can really explain why it looks the way that it looks. I don't know if that's even answering your question, or if that makes it I don't know. All I can say is it's the same program, only it's people that are not in the homes. They're at the Resilience Center. So how do you ask for funding for something like that?
Well, it just looks copied, and also so that it seems like, you know, the same thing exactly. And then somewhere, I believe it's split up. It's not exactly in the same place, but oh yes, I think in both funds there's equipment expense. We'll pay for appliances for the third home, and that's in this one. Well, it can't be in both of them.
You're right. This was poorly done. It was poorly done because I saw those mistakes. But of course, by the time that I like seen them here, it was too late. But no, that's not the case. So I mean, there would be budget revisions, but I don't know.
Emily, do you have more comments?
Simply, I would just ask if you were satisfied with the answers and basically turn it over to you if you'd like to have follow-ups.
Oh, well, I mean, not yet, because, you know, it has to be fixed. Oh. You can't pay for, you know, in the first place, you can't pay for something twice, which it looks like. In the second place, you're asking for expenses for the third home when what you're asking for is the walk-in center. So
right.
I think there's a lot of confusion here, not to mention these funds to pay off people's debts. So,
yes.
You know.
So if given a chance of being able to revise it, I would love to do so, because like I said, that was just him not understanding the ins and outs of how, what exactly we're asking for. Honestly, I don't even know why that would be asked for. I'm not satisfied with the answers I'm giving, actually. I wish I had better answers other than, like, I don't even want to admit that this is shitty. Sorry, but it is. I'm not even going to not. And it's upsetting me as I'm sitting here, because our Resilience Center is the most important center that there is right now, especially in Champaign County, because there's not a safe space for women to go to. There's not a safe space for LGBTQ2S plus to go to. if we get pretrial funds, the Resilience Center is what we will provide the pretrial funds, you know, through our drug court that we're working with. That's so right now for me, this doesn't do what our Resilience Center, it's not doing it justice whatsoever. The services and programming that we give in our homes is the same thing our Resilience Center gives, only it's a physical space for everybody in the county. And that's the only way that, so therefore, funding would go to staff. Funding would go for, assistance with transportation. It would go for, there are some client expenses, you know, that we have helped pay for in the past, like assistance with daycare and stuff like that. But I don't know, you know, there's just, I don't know what else to say.
Yeah. It sounds like we have another question. Yeah.
So thank you for your honesty that, wow, this request did not meet your standards. So, thank you, Elaine, for catching all that, because I just, you know, I wasn't the reviewer.
What a masterclass.
So Brittany, you said that, you know, you could have your grant person possibly, like, revise it. Like, what kind of a turnaround could that be? I mean, because, you know, we're making a decision next week. And right now I'm kind of like, are we just kind of asking for the same money twice? And you're not. So how long do you think it would take for you guys to revise this? And then we'd have to get it to our staff, you know, so they could kind of, you know, I mean, so, and again, I know I'm asking a question that you probably don't know.
I could do it in 48 hours because our Resilience Center has been going since 2022. It's just only came to Champaign in August of last year. So this is not a new program that we've implemented. It's successful in Chicago. It's one that's new to Champaign County, and so this is not hard to revise right away. I can get it with you within 48 hours. I can.
Well, that's the you're talking about the narrative, right? Because then the money is something is something else.
The narrative, but the money as well, because we've already been. We've already been functioning without mental health funding through CEJA money and VOCA money. And so we already know what the budget looks like to, to provide the programming and the actual services of the Resilience Center.
Okay, thank you.
Lynn, was there something you were going to share?
Just, I think that time is actually an issue. I honestly, like, we had that application system was open for 7 weeks. So if it takes 7 weeks to write an application that doesn't give you a form and structure upon which you can make a confident decision, then 48 hours doesn't sound right to me either. But even if it were done in 48 hours, there is no chance for you to look at it. You would be asking staff to look at it and then make a recommendation. Unfortunately, there's a holiday on Monday, so anything that I'm adding to your next week meeting, I have to do Friday, that's more than 48 hours away. So there's really no way to get something in front of you like that. So you would have to just 100% trust staff that, you know, we loved it and we can recommend it, and that's okay, but we also have a whole lot more content to get through. The purpose of this was originally a study session to look only at the memo that's next, and it's quite late. And I think, folks, if you would be right, you know, if you said we're tired and we want to stop here and take things up next week, but we already like shifted a lot of timelines because of lateness. So I don't I think even if Bethany were able to pull this off in 48 hours, and I believe in her, I think she could, I can't follow it up. I just can't. Like, there's already sort of a time travel problem involved.
Oh, and I definitely worried that when I asked the question, but I also had to, you know, ask, you know, if it can be done, what would be the timeline? And again, with the holiday and everything, that's really too much to really expect of our staff. And
like the holiday, I'm not saying I would take even a minute off on the holiday. I'm saying there's no one working at the county on the holiday to post addendum in time. It needs to be posted 48 hours prior to the meeting. No one can do that on Monday. So the 48-hour rule is Friday. So it's not about me, because I will work on it if that is what you want to see. It's about I can't make the federal holiday go away so that the county could post it.
I also would be concerned about, like, fairness to any other agency who doesn't have the opportunity to revise an application. Would we need to reopen the RFP?
No,
we would not need to do that.
There are lots and lots of revisions suggested throughout our staff reviews. That is normal. Like, you have a lot of applications you're looking at that have mistakes that people will be able to fix. They'll have a little time to do it. I think, but what you're asking Bethany to do basically is rewrite the whole thing. And so we could do that without an RFP. It's just the timing is a problem.
We have a board member who has been wanting to speak, so please go ahead, Chris.
Yeah, I had a lot to say about this program, but I don't think I need to say it. I think Elaine has said stuff that I didn't even know were. First, I guess I just want to say I don't even want to consider this 48-hour thing. I don't think there's any reason to even discuss it further. If anyone disagrees, let me know. But I think we're wasting time.
We are also dealing with an over $400,000 shortfall in what we can fund versus what has been requested of us. And funding new services may not be an option for us this year. There has been quite a bit of time to have requested a revision. I just want to say, don't throw your grant writer under the bus.
No, I wanted to ask, because the narrative is not, as I'm reading this, it's not the narrative. It sounds like it's more of what is being asked to be funded, which would be more of the budgeting part of it. Because the narrative, there's not everything in here, the narrative of what we do is correct. It's more so the numbers and the number part of it. And that's the part that I'm just like.
Is this item discussion only, or is there a vote? If so, I call the question.
There is not a vote for this.
I'm okay with this moving forward.
Moving forward to other business. Okay. Any final questions or discussion from board members? All right, seeing none, we will then move on to our next item of business, which is the PY 2026 agency allocation scenarios. As Lynn mentioned, we can make the determination to call this and discuss it next time, but we will also be voting on all of these scenarios next time. So it might be advisable to have some level of a discussion about this. This is a draft memorandum of PY 26 allocation scenarios presented for our information only. The purpose is to support the board making most or all final decisions about these awards next week during the May 28th meeting, for which the memo may be adjusted and suggested actions added. This will be revised and posted to as an addendum by that county deadline on Friday. Emily, please go ahead and ask your question.
Thanks. I would prefer to move this until next meeting, if only for the reason that we know Immigrant Services of Champaign County or Champaign Urbana has said that they will have their audit in at that time.
So you have a pretty big agenda next week. My experience with this memo is that if you don't look at it beforehand, there can be a long discussion and a lot of dissent about. So the idea was, you look at it a week before you have to decide about it. You got you guys might love everything about it, and I don't have to make any changes. Basically, after this meeting, I'm going to go home, finish all the things that I have to do after the meeting. Then I'm going to work on the decision memo and make any changes to this that are indicated through this discussion, including adding recommendations about suggestions about Christian Health and the two women in need recovery applications. You have not had an opportunity to review the immigrant services, so I'm going to add a guess on that one, and then I'm also going to create a decision memo on whether to consider their application, and then bring in the review. And so this is a big addendum. It's this memo, a revised agenda, immigrant services program summary, and a decision memo about them, and get that all done, hoping then that they do send me their audit on Friday morning. There's almost no way that I can finish the follow-up to the audit because there's already some questions about donated funding, but we can move forward as if it's in progress, and I can get all of that posted on Friday. So it would be helpful to get feedback from y'all on this memo, and if you don't want to do it tonight, maybe after, like, reach out to me because...
Okay, so to follow up, like what I just want to point out, so for obvious reasons and constraints, immigrant services isn't included in this consideration of allocations. So I just want to point that out. But also, so if we could, if we're going to move forward this conversation, what information do you need from us to move forward?
I think this is just a discussion of the potential scenarios for next week, which does include some information about the outstanding requests, so that next week we are prepared to vote on as many of these as possible. We do not have to vote on all of them next week. And currently, as it stands, the ones for which scenarios have been presented that we've reviewed up until prior to tonight, we still have quite a bit of money to work with for the remaining agencies. So, and next week, it's what I'm understanding from Lynn is that if Immigrant Services gets their audit to us in time, we will have the opportunity to decide if we want to consider their app. We would then consider their app if we decide to do so. Then we also have to vote on all these allocations. So if we don't discuss them at all in advance tonight, there will be a lot of discussion next time about the allocations, unless we just don't have anything to discuss.
I mean, it might be non-controversial. It's just been a long time since that was true, so I'm never assuming that you all love the suggestions that we're making. So
there's also still Urbana Neighborhood Connection Center is the other agency for whom we have not reviewed their application because their audit has not been turned in. So that would be another one that, potentially could come in before them. But if it does not, then we have the opportunity to take it up later and decide if we want to consider it and or fund it at a later date, as with any other ones that are not fully fleshed out in these scenarios.
So I guess maybe to clarify things for people, I would just say I would next week approve all those motions for the executive director to do all the things with the contracts that needs to get done and all the negotiations and be able to raise prices for the amount that you can give to for the audits and everything. And I would say as for contracts, I'm going to approve everything that is everyone had their audit on time that I feel are good agencies and organizations, pretty much everyone that's had their audit on time. For the money that's remaining, I am going to triage what I feel like I am going to allocate the remaining. I guess we have 2.4 million, give or take, and 3.1 million that we can allocate. So $700,000 with the remaining allocation of funds left for the remaining applicants that we have not fully reviewed yet. So that's what I'm going to divide the money, that $700,000 between, and that's really going to be the harder decisions for me.
Go fast. Yeah, I guess, Lynn, would you mind just like for everyone to get on the same page this evening, even if we don't get into a deep discussion about it, to just walk through what is presented in this memo that we will then be voting on next week?
John really did. Like, that was really the overview. Like, the first several are things that we have in all of the contracts, but they're, I'm going to go back to that because one of those is actually really important. It is, and I really wanted to tell you guys what happened about this. So some of them repeat every year. There's often a need for a contract negotiation, so you're empowering me to do that. There might not be any need to, but if there is, you're empowering me to do that. So that means we don't have to bring a subsequent contract-related decision to you unless it's wild or I'm uncomfortable with it. There's the standard, like, if we get less money than expected, I can make some reductions. That has never happened without full board involvement. So this is sort of a legacy language. I don't know if it's that important. Then there's some that's really important right here about how the contract terms supersede the funding requirements, giving the board the authority to waive some requirements in special circumstances. But here's the one that I really wanted to talk to you about. We had, in several of the April reviews, we had mentioned wanting to track progress with CPA firms on a quarterly basis. And then Molly came up with a much simpler approach, which is just ask everybody to let us know when they start the audit process. Like, and so then our staff were having conversations behind the scenes and suggested to me, maybe we should first find out what's realistic because the county gets really great treatment by its CPA, the independent CPA firm. Like, they have meetings, they have lists of activities and what is going to be needed when. So I just asked the agencies with the outstanding audits, what is your experience like with your CPA firm? And no one was getting that kind of treatment. So I think that it really is important for us just to find out when that first meeting is, and we might need to develop some other supports depending on what is going on with people. So I just wanted to share that with you because it changes the recommendations that come later per agency. So here's the first one. What we tried to do was capture in the bullet points below each proposal and agency name, just capture some of the highlights from the discussions, things that you raised and things that the staff had noticed, and then whatever we have found that we think needs to be done prior to the contract, which would be by June 17th. And everybody's got some little thing like that. Well, there's a few that don't, but for the most part, they're small revisions. So in your discussion that you just had, it is not impossible to do that. You're leaving a lot to us to say, yes, that's great. And I don't think we've taken a risk that big for a long time. So then the special provisions are abbreviated. Some of these are repeated every year for certain programs, but they don't apply to everyone. There are collaborations listed. You had mentioned a collaboration that we had not had before for Promise Healthcare, but they happened to be doing it. So sometimes these collaborations need to be more open-ended to just say to the agency, you know, report on any collaborations and let us know how it's going. So those are captured here. And then there are motions below each one. And as you mentioned, John, every one of these is a motion to approve the full amount requested. Every one of them. And I think almost all of them are for a two-year term as well. That helps to stabilize from the agency's perspective as well as to simplify our work in the spring. So that's the whole thing. And then at the very bottom, you get some analysis of how much we've spent and how much is left on the bottom of page 95. And this is where I collected the blurbs about those that you had not had a chance to review yet. So now you have reviewed 3 out of the 5, and I can fill in under where it says staff notes, I can fill in parts of the discussion here and then add motions to those. So that's what I kind of not totally sure what I heard. So I'm going to just wing it and give you something and you can change it. It's like, you can change anything in here, but, you know, it's been nice to have. The closer that I can get to what you all are comfortable with, the easier your board meeting goes. But that doesn't have to be like that. So I'll put something in there, and you can take it from there for each of those three. And then for immigrant services, I think I will also put them in there as if you had been able to review them. So you'll only have one that's left. And then, but you still next week make decisions related to that. Is that an okay overview? That's really all there is. Okay.
Sorry. Yeah, they finished up their audit, and the ISCU board is approving it tomorrow night.
So I had 8 phone calls from them today. No, because I was in a 3-hour board meeting. I mean, it was, you know, I appreciate, like, that is a reflection of how anxious they are to get this done. So we did talk for a while. She was not available, but I talked to someone else from there. I had already sent them a list of follow-up questions because I saw a draft of the audit. So this could happen very fast, but the problem is just that, why does Memorial Day have to be in between? I mean, really, that one more day could make such a difference in whatever product I'm giving you for next week. So anyway, if you guys are comfortable with that as the overview of this memo, I feel more confident about what I'm going to put together now. Okay.
And I definitely hope that you know, the audit gets officially approved tomorrow, that it can be gotten. I mean, it is, again, a big ask on our staff to get all of this to us, and I just want to acknowledge, like, how that has continued to be a thing, and just thank all of the staff for all their attention to these issues that have often happened, like, in the midnight hour before materials have to come to us. But, I mean, I am heartened by the fact that, you know, with the applications we have reviewed so far, we do have the potential to award, you know, the full amount to all of them, and potentially some of the ones that we have not reviewed yet. So that has not always been the case for us in prior years. Lynn, do you want to share one more thing?
Yeah, it's actually the next item. I think this is really important because these do not appear in your board packet for next week. These are responses from the agencies. They're not all pointing out errors in our work, which is what we're asking them to do. Some of them are clarifying just because they wanted you to know. So I just want to make sure that you know they're in there. I don't know if we'll need to look at these next week. It's nice to have the info, but I just want to make sure that you know they're in there now.
I guess with this remaining discussion, I just want to also be clear. We have very little business after this, so we were very close to being done. Is there any board questions or discussion about any of the scenarios that have been proposed on pages 80 through 97 here? It appears none. I read them all earlier, and they were fantastic, and I think captured the board discussions very well so far. So with that, it seems we don't have any further discussion on that point. So we have discussed the PY26 funding request on page 98 is just the spreadsheet, and then those applicant responses to staff reviews are on pages 99 through 103. We didn't officially mark them in the discussion so far, but they are there. So now we can move to old business. And we have already done the evaluation capacity building project update, so we can now move to PY 2025 third quarter program activity reports, which are on pages 121 through 162. For our information, service activity reports from funded programs are included. Any comments on these from staff and or any board discussion on these?
As I think we've learned early, like at the beginning of the meeting, that there are some missing that have been submitted since we put the board packet together. I'm not sure how many, but Courage Connection for sure.
All right, thank you. Any board discussion? Seeing none, we will move next to public participation agency input. Again, anyone is able to speak with us and share their thoughts with us. So if you want to make comment, please either come to the podium. There is no one here to do that. So if you have comment online, please raise your hand or note something in the chat. With that, is there anybody who would like to share comment with us? All right, seeing none, we will next move on to board reports. So as always, board members can serve as liaisons to other agency boards or other community boards. There's a spreadsheet of who is kind of assigned to what committees on page 163. And if you are interested in getting involved, you can always reach out to Stephanie Howard Gallo to do so. Are there any board members who have a report to share? All right, seeing none, we will move to county board input. Do we have any county board input?
Sweet, sweet silence.
Amazing, but also remembering opioid settlement funds. So next, Champaign County Developmental Disabilities Board input. Do we have any input from them?
Yes, they wanted me to tell you that they unanimously voted to advise you that they would like you to use the DD set-aside funds that remain to fund that family development program from DSC. So hopefully that'll be a really comfortable vote next week, knowing that they liked it and two of you reviewed it as well. So that's it. Otherwise, they made it through all their decisions. Sorry.
Well, that is really cool, and I'm very happy for them and not happy for us. All right. Thank you very much. Next, board announcements and input. Are there any board announcements or input? All right. I have a brief, I guess, not really sort of announcement or input. So as noted earlier, we have moved the officer elections to next week so that we don't have to have a meeting in June. I just wanted to put out there that anyone who is interested in running for an officer position, you know, please consider it. I know John and I are both eligible to have a second term of our positions, but I think thinking to the future, if there's anybody who's interested in potentially being an officer either now or in the future, it might be something to consider, including, you know, sometimes the VP ends up becoming the president, has happened several times in a row now. So while John and I are happy to rotate these positions between each other forever, we also really want to encourage any board members who might be interested to think about it and you know, share if you're interested. And if anybody has questions about being an officer for the mental health board, you can definitely ask Lynn. You can also ask John and myself. And I know several other board members have been officers before. You know, any of us are welcome to answer questions. So please consider it. Any other announcements or input? All right, seeing none, we can adjourn. Our next meeting is May 28th, 2025 at 5:45 p.m. right back here in the Shields-Carter Room of the Brookings Administrative Building in Urbana, and probably our last meeting in this room. So I hope you all have a great night. We are adjourned.
Recording stopped.
Yeah, right.
So I guess in June we're meeting in the building.